Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Professor Donal O'Shea, National Clinical Lead for Obesity. Good morning.
Good morning, Brendan.
Donal, we wanted to do a bit of a catch-up on the semaglutide weight loss drugs. I think since we last spoke, it feels like they've become significantly more prevalent and are now, they really are a kind of almost a defining phenomenon in the culture now. So in terms of actual people who are legitimately on Ozempic, Mounjaro, Wegovy, etc., how many people in Ireland are legitimately on these drugs?
Oh, probably of the order for diabetes and semaglutide, probably 25,000-30,000 with diabetes anyway. In terms of its use in overweight and obesity, it's only the once daily injection is, if you like, funded by the state. Daily injection is funded by the state for people with a particular complex obesity, and then anybody else who's on it is self-paying, and for the likes of the unavailable in this country, many are sourcing it from abroad.
Okay, so if we come back to the people who clinically need it,
yeah,
or are prescribed it, anecdotally, a lot of people are noticing people in their lives who are clearly using these drugs to transform themselves. People who are not maybe clinically obese, but who are, did I notice you saying have overweight or have obesity,
yeah.
Yeah. Have you noticed this?
I mean, it's prevalent. It's being widely used by people who do not meet the clinical indications but want to, in inverted commas, shed pounds, shed kilos. And that has hijacked the narrative of the emergence of these treatments as highly effective treatments for the chronic disease of obesity.
Yeah.
And we now just have noise about this space where it's rather than destigmatizing the disease of obesity, which is what the emergence of treatments normally does, what we're getting is further stigmatizing of the disease of obesity.
Judgment,
yeah. An intrinsic bias precedes stigma, and most people have a fundamental intrinsic bias that the treatment of obesity is just eat less and move more, and you should not need the help of expensive medication.
Okay. So these people who are taking it non-clinically indicated, are they getting these from doctors?
Look, when I was looking up how to pronounce some of the newer ones on the way in, just that, I got 6 offers of buy now 70% off.
Okay, but from legitimate...
Legitimate... outlets in other countries
where you go online, you get prescribed online, and you get sent. You buy it off them.
You go online. You can fib about your age, your height, your weight, so that you qualify. And a lot of younger people are using this who, again, want to control their numbers on the scales. Mm. And you will have it within a couple of days.
And that is the actual drug, not a bootleg version.
And that is the actual drug. The vast majority of what people are getting when they go online is the real deal.
Okay. Then there seems to be another level to this where people are from TikTok or whatever. Like, for example, Channel 4 have been doing a lot on this. Retatutride, I could be pronouncing that wrong, an Eli Lilly drug that is in clinical testing at the moment. There's something called retatutride being widely sold on TikTok. So that's dangerous, yes?
Yeah, I mean, that's the Ozempic and Wegovy works on one receptor in your body. That's a GLP-1 receptor. Retatrutide works on 3 receptors in your body. It's called a tri-receptor agonist. And it's the most powerful drug in development. It doesn't even have a name yet for when it goes to market, because it's about 2 years away from being on the market.
But that's presumably not what people are getting from TikTok, is it?
It is being made in compound pharmacies in the United States.
Okay.
And it is being sold and it is available in Ireland.
Are these people putting themselves in danger?
They're taking a massive risk with their health by going on a treatment that hasn't even been fully assessed for use in the setting of the disease of obesity. It's looking good. We're excited about it. But to be self-administering from a sourced abroad outlet, this drug, it's an incredible phenomenon, but it's a phenomenon.
Okay. So, regardless of what you were saying at the beginning there about that we still have these biases about weight and how weight should be lost and everything, I suppose we like to think as a country and a culture that we have moved on a bit and that, you know, that kind of skinny thing was a kind of a 90s thing and everything, that we look back on it now and think that they were misguided times. Is there a danger that the kind of lifestyle use of these drugs, if you want to call it that, is bringing us back to that kind of era where, you know, nothing tastes as good as skinny feels, thin is the goal?
I think there is an element of possibility about that. I mean, the vision I like to have is that we will see an end to severe and complex obesity through more availability of treatments earlier, better use of surgery. So obesity surgery has gone off a cliff edge in the United States over the last 2 years, but is recovering. So there's kind of a balancing period when these treatments become available clearly, where people don't opt for surgery. But surgery remains a really good, very cost-effective treatment for people with severe and complex obesity.
Okay. Back to the question, though. Are we back to a mindset where young people particularly maybe are aspiring to be skinny again?
I think we are. And I know GPs are talking about finding parents coming in, finding Wegovy under the pillow of their teenage son who wants to be gym toc fit and have that impossible physique that has been presented to young people as desirable, and it's almost unachievable through normal behaviour.
So it's not healthy?
No.
Okay. So the drugs that are on the market legitimately now currently need to be injected, and the race is now on between the companies to get tablet versions. Where is that at and what difference is that going to make? Will that make them far more prevalent then, like that more people will start taking them?
Yeah, I mean, a tablet form becoming available, it's incredible because these drugs are hormones, and that means they're made up of amino acids, which is the building block of protein. So your body breaks down protein in the gut when you eat your steak or your burger. So the fact that the pharmaceutical industry have got to the point where we have oral effective versions of these tablets.
So a tablet that gets past the gut.
Yeah. I mean, we still don't have oral insulin. You know, we're still injecting insulin 100 years later. But we now have these tablets available in oral form. That changes the landscape completely. The World Health Organization can now say GLP-1 should be considered an essential medicine. Because once it's a tablet, the cold supply chain, the injectable, it has a global reach. So they can say it should be available as an essential medicine. People are much more likely to take a tablet still than an injection. And they're more likely to take a tablet earlier and go to their GP and look for treatment if they know it's a tablet form.
Okay, so that's good for people who actually need it. Probably will lead to more people who don't technically need it taking it as well.
No doubt, because people are much more likely to take an oral tablet than they are to self-inject. A lot of people still have a problem with self-injection.
So for people thinking of getting into this on a casual basis, they should bear in mind as well, there are side effects. Tell me first, so Robbie Williams on the front of the Sun, which I doubt you take the Sun somehow, but he is talking about that he feels that it's affecting his vision. And they say in that piece, there was a US study found that these jabs could cause a lack of blood flow to the optic nerve. Is that one side effect that we're seeing?
Yeah, so and this has been reported all along in these studies. There's an incredibly low rate of a rare eye problem with these drugs. It's been bandied about in social media in a much more prominent way. So in 15 years of using these treatments in the diabetes setting, I have not seen a case of this rare eye disease. But it is there, it's in the background, and it's something people need to watch out for.
What have you seen?
What you see is the GI, gastrointestinal, nausea, constipation, vomiting, change in taste, dizziness and loss of balance can occur with some people, and that's a slightly curveball presentation. But we have seen people admitted just down the road with kidney failure, with loss of consciousness following a fall. So the idea, and when people take something that they're sourcing themselves, they don't declare it when they come into the emergency department because they're a bit embarrassed about it, and you end up kind of working kind of in the dark.
So, and then this is possibly more kind of philosophical question. There's mention of a thing called Ozempic personality, and that kind of affects people's mood, their enjoyment of food, sex, life. Do they by their nature dull enjoyment of life?
I've certainly had people who have had a very good effect from it in terms of their appetite and food noise being reduced, and they say, you know what, I'm stopping it because I'm not enjoying my food, and food is an important part of life.
Yeah.
And I would fully respect that kind of decision making. The neurobiological effects of these drugs are going to be the big thing we look at over the next 10 to 20 years. I think it's going to have a role. It certainly has a role in kind of impulse control. It certainly has a role in all kinds of appetite. So, you know, food,
so
appetite,
addiction.
Alcohol, addiction, you know, it's very clearly, and it's been studied now prospectively in patients with alcohol use disorder, opioid use disorder and gambling, because the rate of alcohol misuse in people on the GLPs is about a quarter of what it is in people who are not on the GLPs, in people with a history of alcohol use disorder.
Yeah, there's a thing that was kind of an eye-opener for me. We had a few people in here who were on the drugs, and one person, I had never heard about food noise before, amazingly, and she talked about how the food noise was gone, and you thought, okay, so there's a component of it that is helping in some way that addiction or obsession.
People couldn't describe food noise. It wasn't described before the emergence of these treatments.
Okay, it was like noise-cancelling headphones. They suddenly realised,
yeah,
oh my God.
And we used to meet people after surgery, and they'd wake up after surgery, and, you know, for years they'd have started their day with a cup of coffee, and now a cup of coffee and they gag. So immediate change in taste preference following the obesity surgery. You see that in some people taking these GLP-1 treatments. And then that food noise concept is fascinating.
So you, we hear more now, and I don't know how much of this is just connected to purely helping with obesity, but the heart, the brain, they're suggesting it might help stave off Alzheimer's, Parkinson's. You think as well they could have a role to play in cancer?
Yeah, I was in Berlin, and the oncologists think it may have a role in cancer. And there was a paper published last week on retatrutide, that triple receptor agonist, in a model of pancreatic cancer, which is a difficult to treat cancer, showing it is as effective as the most effective anti-cancer treatments we have in that setting. Right?
That's extraordinary, isn't it?
But that is bizarre, because when I was in Berlin, what I was saying to the oncologists, don't think about these as a treatment for cancer, but treat the obesity in people living with cancer, and you will improve their quality of life. And if it helps the cancer a little bit, that's a bonus, but don't think of it as a treatment.
Okay.
This retatrutide study would say, well, hang on a second, maybe it is going to be an effective anti-cancer adjunct.
Wow. Are these potentially the miracle drugs?
Oh, don't use that word, because we just need to step away from that. I'm GLP was discovered in 1988. I started working with it in 1992. We now have oral treatment. I never thought I'd see this during my career. I thought it would come after I'd retired. I think its role in the neurobiological stuff, the addiction, the ADHD, the impulse control, its role in protecting the brain. There's clear signals of all of these that need to be worked out.
Okay.
The way we do things in medicine, which is with prospective trials that are designed, controlled, and analysed.
Okay.
The problem
slow is down, is what you're
slow,
saying.
Slow down. And yeah. Okay. There isn't an environment with social media to allow you to slow down.
Okay. You're talking about the cost today on the front of the Examiner. So, like, there's people, these drugs are lifesavers for them, literally. How much are they paying? Do are they available on the medical card? Do they get anything from the drug treatment scheme?
So you have, for diabetes, you get the diabetes doses. The doses for obesity are higher, and only the once daily is covered for a small percentage of people with obesity. The Ozempic is about 150 a month. By the time you're looking at Mounjaro, you're 250 up to 350 if you're getting it in a pharmacy in this country. A lot of people are going up north with their prescription because it's about €70 cheaper.
Okay.
And many are looking online. We've no idea what the tablets will be cheaper because you don't have the injectable stuff and you don't have the device that goes with it. So tablets ultimately, apart from allowing the WHO kind of embrace them, you know, also brings the price down a lot.
Okay, and just briefly, do you think that situation might be about to change?
Availability?
Price.
Oh,
and money on the medical card and so forth.
There's a HTA coming out on Mounjaro from Michael Barry's group in James's. I hope we'll have some availability of that covered under the scheme. The companies have been very clever in patenting and sub-patenting to protect their patents and make their patents last longer to keep the generics at bay and to keep the price up.
Okay.
So that they make their money back before it goes generic.
Okay. Professor Donal O'Shea, fascinating. Thank you very much. And now it's just 12 noon and we'll pause for the Angelus.